Chapter 7. A Magic Show. Well past the onset of evening, Pao had still not returned. Sean and Jenny set about tidying up the balcony from the day's creativity, while Leonardo went to ask the cook to prepare an extra place for his friend, Pacioli, whom he expected to arrive any moment. "Are you worried about Pao?" Sean asked Jenny. "Oh, not really. He often does this. Goes off in a tantrum when he can't have his own way. He's just worried. He'll calm down soon enough." "I like it like this, just you and me and Leo." "Sean, I like you too. I don't know why exactly. Thanks a bundle." "What I mean is, I normally don't allow myself any feelings for monos. It's just too painful. We see monodirectionals trapped on their timeline, destined to age, and..." Sean knew she didn't want to say die to him. "Maybe it's because I'm not a mono, at least not for now. Jenny, who are you? Where do you come from?" She sighed. "We usually tell people something vague, but for which they have a context."
"Such as?"
"Oh, sometimes we say we are ghosts or angels. Other times we say we are from the future or from beyond the veil."
"The other world? Would you prefer that one?"
"Is it true?"
"They could all be true. We're not sure ourselves. Pao thinks we've been sent here to teach poor humans how to live better. That is why he wants us to pose as the perfect examples, to inspire."
"But that is not what you think. Can you tell me that?" She sighed and thought for an unusually long time before answering, weighing her words carefully.
"I think we are human entities. We don't come from anywhere. We belong here, have always been here. We just keep traveling through time again and again. Never aging, never dying. I have no memory of anything else. We are as much a part of this world as you have always been. Furthermore, we are detached consciousnesses. We can manifest ourselves any way we wish. But we have no body of our own, no corporal existence."
"So you will travel on soon?"
Sean was depressed at this.
"I am sorry, Sean. I wish you could come with us. Something tells me Pao is wrong, that you do belong with us, somehow."
She looked earnestly into his alive brown eyes, as if willing the impossible to be true, suspending the inevitable that weighed her so. It shadow won, as it always did, and took possession of her face. She looked down.
"But it can't happen. It never does."
"No future?
No time, at least not to call our own," she answered sadly.
"Let's talk about something else. Tell me about your family."
Sean walked to the north end of the balcony and pointed.
"Just there, behind that tree? There, one day, about 1800 to be precise, will be built a house right next to this one."
"Who will be your neighbors? Who will live in this house then?"
Jenny looked through the glass doors to the beautifully decorated interior of the not-yet-haunted house, with its fine frescoes, ornate chandelier, dark wooden paneling and stone enclaves, and, most unusually, no less than 4 fireplaces made of local red porphyry, distributed evenly around the 8 square walls of the large ballroom.
"Nobody will ever live in this house," said Sean.
"But how can that be? They would demolish an abandoned house, surely, even one as beautiful as this one."
"No, they try, often. But whenever workmen approach, strange things happen. The house becomes known to be haunted, and then nobody will enter. The strangest thing of all is that even though nobody ever goes in, or if they do, they never come out again, it remains well cared for. Nothing rots or rusts, ever falls off, no matter how strong a storm may be."
"How strange."
"I live next door with my family."
Sean's voice cracked when he tried to say their names.
"You miss them very much, don't you?"
He nodded. She placed her arms around him, and he allowed her to hold him.
"Dear, dear Sean, I wish I could help you understand what is happening to you. Why you have traveled so long away from your loved ones, but I cannot."
Sean lifted his head.
"Tell me, Jenny, do you believe everything has a purpose, a reason?"
"Yes.
Yes, I do."
"Then tell me, why did my mother disappear?"
"Your mother disappeared? How awful. What happened?"
"We don't know. One day she just wasn't there anymore. From that day my nonno began to investigate the haunted house, this house."
"You know what I think, Sean? I think your nonno knows a lot more about this than you realize. In fact, I feel his presence all around us. You know what?
I think you're going to see both him and your mother again one day.
Do you really think so?
Asked Sean, beaming his tears dry.
Yes, trust me.
I will always do that, replied Sean, and they gazed at each other in the rising moonlight for as long as the world, so often unsympathetic to lost souls, would allow them.
Which, to make its point, wasn't long, because just then Pau rode up the drive in an 8-hoof drive carriage, and with him was Leonardo's dearest friend, the mathematician and occasional monk, Frate Luca Bartolomeo de Pacioli.
Leonardo had been in an inventive mood, and had spent an hour with the cook, trying out some new cooking methods. As a result, the evening meal was both highly suspicious-looking and delicious. During the second main course, Sean asked Luca Pacioli what he did when he wasn't inflicting mathematics on his students at university.
"We make books,"
the cleric, 7 years older than Leonardo, answered.
"I write the text. Young Leo there does the illustrations."
"Wow! How are they selling?" asked Sean.
"Not at all well,"
beamed Luca joyfully, adjusting his monk's habit. "Curves are the woo by, did well for a while," countered Leo. Luca smiled at him.
"Only because of your great centerfold illustrations, my dear friend. It was selling brilliantly until the church slapped an X rating on it."
"X rating?" Sean was surprised.
"Oh, the usual withdrawal from market or we excommunicate threat. Legal gibberish so the church can retain their monopoly on the word. They force everyone to keep a copy of their Gospel Explorer, version 2, on their desktop, to establish it as the world standard search tool for all knowledge and wisdom. There is a growing movement in Germany which may one day lead to an antitrust action, but the church has a burning desire to counter with an anti-antitrust action of their own."
"What about your farming guides? Know your sheep, barcoding for the modern shepherd," Jenny continued.
When it became obvious that even its authors had forgotten that one, she said hastily, "But the Vitruvian Man is doing well, isn't it?" She whistled appreciatively as she held up a battered copy of the famous centerfold of the well-proportioned man in two superimposed positions, inside a square and a circle.
"That is our joint project, the De Divina Proporzione. It is promising. It was featured in the summer edition of Play Prints, syndicated by the Machiavellian Group. Leo and I have done extensive field research, trying to determine the perfect golden ratio between breast separation and belly button. These young models will do anything to get into a syndicated painting. It's all based on Euclid's geometry. Poor Euclid. Totally obsessed by that magic triangle. I think he died prematurely of repetitive measurement strain."
Sean couldn't believe what he was hearing, if his maths teacher could hear this. "But I thought Euclid was the father of geometry."
"What he fathered in his private life is none of my concern," went on Luca. "He was in the business of catalogue made-to-order golden triangles, based on the divine proportions. And what is more divinely proportioned than young ladies?"
Leonardo took over the explanation. "Now, a Roman called Vitruvius figured that this ratio, which so pleaseth the eye of man, if applied to, for example, architecture, would amaze and bewilder. Luca and I want to revive this lost fundamental art of erotic geometry."
Luca grinned more than a little wickedly. "I personally think of very little else, and so do my students."
"Is that why the Pope has his private chambers adorned with pictures of nude girls?" nodded Jenny.
"It is the only pious explanation. Now, I can proudly say that Leonardo and I have finally recreated the golden ratio, and here it is."
"Where?"
asked Powell, Jenny, and Sean together.
"Here."
Luca waved his arms around him.
"In this room?" asked Sean.
"Not in the room, it is the room, or rather the entire house."
Sean looked around in amazement. The room was indeed made up of panels which were an unusual mixture of perfectly symmetrical square and triangular shapes. Luca continued,
Leo and I designed the house for Francesco after we discovered that if you extend the golden ratio, as illustrated by the Vitruvian Man, into three dimensions, you get an exact rhombicuboctahedron.
A sacked rhombicuboctahedron? Cool, said Pao.
You know, Pao, I can never tell when you are being serious, said Luca.
That's easy, said Sean. He's never serious.
Luca continued.
Well, that's all right, then. As I was saying, the sacked rhombicuboctahedron is an Archimedean solid.
So Archimedes has left a legacy?
Sean beamed with joy.
He certainly has. It is a shape containing 18 squares and 8 triangles, formed symmetrically into something exhaustingly close to a sphere, a kind of ball for foot.
A football?
Might start a fad. But the beautiful thing is that the resulting shape maintains the golden ratio in all directions.
Leo added, beneath ours, the same pattern of squares and triangles extends down through the lower floor and into the wine cellar. The focal point is the very center of this room.
And this gives the house magical properties? Sarcastic inquired Pao.
And that's the theory, nodded Luca. And we can test it, right now.
Test a theory? How refreshingly heretical. If Aristotle were up to it, he would return in his grave,
commented Leonardo, stroking his beard as potential lit up his eyes.
How do we test it? Asked Sean.
Give a magic show, announced Luca.
Oh, please do. I love magic shows, pleaded Jenny.
Oh, don't encourage him, said Leonardo, pretending to bury his face in his hands.
While the servants were clearing away the dinner things, Sean helped Luca arrange the chairs around the walls, focused on the center of the room, where was located a waist-high, beautifully fluted porphyry pedestal. The show went fairly well, although when they were invited to attend, the servants suddenly remembered a latrine or two that needed urgent scrubbing. Unperturbed, Luca first produced a hat from a rabbit, a bunch of wands from a flower, and a sleeve from a deck of cards, to polite applause. He wanted to cut a saw in half with a lady, but there were no volunteers. And then he announced that for a finale, he would make any personal item of Leonardo's appear.
Don't you, I mean, disappear? Asked Leo as he handed over the watch.
Hopefully it is a round trip, optimistic to Luca
with disconcerting glee. Luca placed the watch with corny showiness on the pedestal in the centre of the room.
I look a here, I look a there, I look a everywhere. O watch of thine be lost in time, time to watch this trick I botch.
He pulled the kerchief away to reveal that he had indeed botched the trick. The watch was still there. Everybody thought this was a grand joke. Luca took a theatrical bow, then went to pick up the watch to hand it back to Leonardo. His fingers passed right through it. Everybody stopped laughing and stared in amazement.
Very good, Luca, commented Leonardo, actually impressed.
Thank you, Leo, but I didn't do it.
Luca moved his hand through the image again. It shimmered slightly, but remained.
The watch is ephemeral.
It had indeed vanished in every sense except for its image.
It seems we have separated the material watch from its image,
mentally annotated Luca, as if it were the sort of thing he did every day. While the others were busy congratulating Luca, Sean went to Leonardo, who was staring sadly at the image of the watch.
Maestro Leo, what does this mean?
Who knows? Leonardo thought for a while. What is the watch exactly? It has grown to be more than an artifact lost in time. It is the mythical Sangreal, royal blood, the Sangreal, marketed by popular law syndicates as Santo Graal, the Holy Grail. But the most important role of the watch is as an inspiration. It empowers the mind with valuable uncertainties.
And what about Speaky Celesti, the language of the gods? Asked John.
Its time is not yet. But I suspect it has some key role to play in the coming revolution, under which our minds are finally liberated from prescripture.
You know about the scientific revolution? Asked John.
Perhaps the watch is drawn to its inevitabilities as much as you are drawn to it. With the Sangreal, we have a glimpse of the future. The image of the watcher here is now a permanent window to the inevitable.
Sean looked at the image on the pedestal, and the display, 15, 11, 2010, is not changing.
2010, the time it disappeared, or 2010, the date you disappeared. Possibly both.
Why do you look so sad, Maestro?
Leonardo looked over at Jenny and Powell. What I wonder is whether the Watcher is now taking over the role of the Time Riders, replacing human entities with the technologies.
Is that why they are being captured by Cespuglio? Asked Sean.
I don't know. But I did not answer Jenny about whether I had seen their future visits, because...
Please, Maestro, please don't tell me it's because there aren't any.
Before he could answer, they were joined by the others. Pao was speaking haughtily.
So, you and Leo are purveyors of erotic geometry. Do you honestly believe, Dr. Pacioli, that the universe really does rotate on the golden ratio of nipple separation to belly button?
He sniggered, and received a punch on his upper arm from Jenny for his trouble. Luca took this as a serious question.
I don't know. All I can say is that if the universe does have a single divine proportion, I would want it to be that one. We need something to bring back the crowds to live maths demonstrations. The home entertainment industry...
Sean looked at Leonardo for an explanation. He means a printed box, whispered Leo.
Maybe just a passing fad, but it is killing traditional culture. The golden ratio could be a way of calculating the location of a portal to a wonderful greater cosmos. Leo and I have worked on this idea. He using the geometry of artistic beauty, I numberfications, to try to visualize such other world views. What else is a multi-story building but a compression of horizontal space into a vertical series of parallels? Tell them about the cows, Leo.
Cows?
Sean was as confused as ever.
Did you know cows can't look up? What, then, does a cow make of the upper floors of a building? Are they not only inaccessible to the cow, but also invisible?
Yet we know the upper floors exist, nodded Jenny. You mean to say the cow is convinced it exists in two-dimensional space, while we look down on it from an invisible third dimension, suggested Sean.
That puts it rather well, don't you think, Leo?
Said Luca.
Yes, nodded Leonardo, adopting the new term. Now, if in the cow's two-dimensional world, the third dimension is invisible in the same way, a fourth dimension would be invisible to people who are convinced they live in a three-dimensional world, concluded Sean.
Which is what we do, finished Jenny.
And what would be the staircases in such a world? Asked Sean, amazed that he was discussing multidimensional space with people a century before Descartes would draw the first set of axes in two, then for an encore, three dimensions.
Leo answered, Ah, what indeed. They can only be put where you know there is another floor to go to. To do that, you need to understand the divine proportions to visualize the other dimensions. Have you ever wondered why Archimedes had the solution to the ratio between the volumes of a cylinder and the sphere it contains carved on his tomb?
It was a message, added Luca.
Who to? Asked Sean, getting excited.
That is the thousand florin question, continued Luca. By all rights, the sack of Syracuse should have destroyed all of Archimedes' work. The Romans conducted a thorough sweep and clear audit of Syracuse, but the watch could not be found. All traces were lost, so the Sangreal was syndicated to legend.
Leo continued, As for the golden ratio, all Archimedes had to do was carve the truth high and bold in front of everybody's noses. He had arranged for his tomb well beforehand, taking advantage of some summer specials at the local marble quarry. The Romans, their noses being what they are, still couldn't see it. Not, that is, until over 100 years after Archimedes' death, when along came a philosophical entrepreneur called Cicero.
Luca went on.
Our guess is he was seeking the Sangreal, reputed to have appeared to Archimedes. Cicero unearthed the tomb and made a killing from popularizing the legend of Archimedes, which he licensed to architects. Later, Vitruvius adapted the golden ratio to human proportions, and Leo drew the Vitruvian man from his description.
Near the end of this remarkable evening, Sean was once more alone with Leonardo.
Maestro, do you know what Archimedes meant by his speaky celesti?
The language of the gods. Art and nature are expressions of each other. They are the only things that are defined by needing no justification. Until we started using three-dimensional parallax and based on Euclid's laws of geometry, paintings were flat and unnatural. Mathematics is therefore the only language we have to project from one limited reality to a greater one, the only means with which to talk to the forces that make up and drive the permanent universe. What else are gods?
He looked at the image of the watch.
Everything else is immaterial and transient. And while we're on this topic, I'm afraid that the watch moving on means the time is a-coming soon for you to follow it.
But I never want to leave you, maestro.
I will miss you terribly, Sean. You called me nonno. I shall never forget that.
Then I will stay with you.
And your real nonno? He needs a you too.
Yes, Sean said miserably. As much as he loved Leonardo, he also desperately wanted to see nonno again and tell him he was all right.
Jenny came to them.
So, good night, Maestro Leonardo. Good night, dear, dear, dearest Sean.
She kissed him gently on both cheeks, then tousled his hair to break the moment of intimacy.
I will dream of you finding your mother. That will make it happen.
She turned to hide her tears and hurried up the stairs.
Leonardo looked from the crestfallen Sean to his departing angel. After a tactful while, he said,
Yes, she is all right. I think no matter what we desire, how we would like it to be otherwise, the universe has its own indelible plan.
So, if we're not allowed to determine our own fate, why do we live? How can we find happiness?
It is never a question of why we live, but that we live fully. And as regards a happiness, we don't look for it. It finds us when it's good and ready. And to make its path to us all the easier, it is best if we embrace the true nature of things. I'll tell you one thing I've observed. Illusion is a strong happiness repellent. I can foresee a time, it must come, when the whole human species will be facing disaster because they turn their back on the guidance of nature in favour of illusion and lose the golden ratio between hope and reality.
Then I shall make it my life's ambition to remind them.
And do that, Sean. It may be all of our salvation. I do believe we did not meet by chance.
So do I.